What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. My name is Adam. I am your host. If you're here on the stream, thank you for watching live. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit the subscribe button and like button. I would really appreciate that. Or if you want to tweet out the stream, if you're watching on Twitter, Periscope, stuff like that, really appreciate that as well. We have another illustrious guest here on our weekday show. We have Danny Black from Baltimore Sports Collectibles, but also Hobby News Daily, which is something we're going to get into later on. Danny, how are we doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate being here, Adam.
Absolutely. Danny and I work with Hobby Hotline. And then, like I said, Hobby News Daily. So we're going to get, actually, I guess maybe we can get right into Hobby News Daily if that's something, if you're interested in kind of, you don't have to do like a full promo, but like definitely, sure. You know, let the audience know sort of what we got going on. Oh, I also should have probably mentioned, so I'm doing a podcast with Hobby News Daily. I think that's probably how I should have introed that a little bit. But, and I started this morning, depending on when you're listening to it. It was Thursday, the 23rd. So if you're listening, I'll be doing Tuesdays and Thursdays. So yeah, just kind of give us some info on what Hobby News Daily is and what we have going on, I suppose.
Yeah, no, definitely. The idea was there's so many great content creators, people of thought in our hobby, people that delve into some really cool topics. And I really wanted to curate that into one space, but also make it a daily refuge where you can come in every morning, you can get your morning cup of coffee. We call it the Hobby News Daily Morning Minute. And you are the host of that on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we have Mike Jocham on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And I mean, you two speak to what the site is, which is just, you know, great talent. And we'll talk more later, but just really talented people in the hobby sharing thoughts and ideas and lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, and in the site, I just put the link in the chat, so hobbynewsdaily.com. We have started doing the podcast. I think people are going to be starting to write soon. So is there like an official launch date for it? I know we've talked about it, but obviously let the audience know sort of when they can be looking for it.
So April 1st is our official launch date. Typically, we're going to run updates Monday through Friday, but in honor of the launch, we're going to have a full weekend blowout for that weekend. It is right at opening day for the baseball season, the Mint Collective for the hobby, and our launch and the show in Chantilly. So we thought it was kind of a good crux of all these things happening in our world to come together at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I put the Twitter link in the chat. Is that kind of where people can find updates for kind of everything that's going on as well?
Yeah, we're trying to be as tech forward as we can. So Twitter, Instagram, our website. And if you want to listen to Adam or Michael in the Morning Minute, you can listen to actually on podcast form or right through the website. Actually, you can play it right through there.
Yeah, so definitely check out the podcast. It's the same as the name of the website. You can find it on Spotify, iTunes, or, you know, like Danny was saying, you can also find it on the website. It's going to be directly on there. So I'm definitely excited to kind of see everything else that we have going. I mean, you can go to the website now and kind of see all the writers, and there's some phenomenal talent that's been in the hobby forever that has like really great knowledge. And I mean, I think that's one thing that like within the hobby now, we've definitely seen an increase in people who are creating content. And I think our group has some of probably the longest, I guess, longevity of anybody, any group that's kind of been put together. So
we're old.
It's going to be really great.
Yep,
yeah, boy. Yeah, I guess. I wasn't gonna say old, but you know, I guess maybe we could put it that way. But either way, I think, you know, experience wise, I think we have some of the best, most experience, and then best experience in you know, in the hobby overall, for sure.
Without a doubt, and I will brag on our staff like my children, and when we get into that later, I will run down the roster. But it's you are not you could not be more correct, and you are actually testimony to that. So both directions.
Yeah. So like I said, check out Twitter, check out the website, check out the podcast we got going, and then articles and writing is going to be starting to go in. So I guess we'll move on a little bit from that. So you know. Danny, you are how would you describe yourself? Cause like, I think that's one thing that like, I like to bring on people who create content, but not everyone considers themselves a content creator. So like overall, like what do you have like a title that like when you either introduce yourself or stuff along those lines, when you meet people, like how would you describe yourself in this hobby?
That's a great question. I am a private broker. That is the essence of what I do financially. Is I work with high-end clients buying and selling for personal collections. I do work as a consultant with some companies in the space, but I am a content creator. I have a background in radio in Baltimore. I write for a paper and do content for Baltimore media as well. But in the hobby, I have absolutely fallen in love with talking with people like you about the hobby and the shared passion we have. And even if we collect different things or, you know, have different viewpoints, I have really learned to embrace and cherish, you know, those relationships and find myself wanting to create more content. And now I think I got to call myself Hobby News Daily. So I think my title is going to be changing to Hobby News Daily, all titles included there. So maybe that needs to be updated on my LinkedIn page.
Yeah, I mean, for me, for sure, content has always kind of been first. That's kind of how I got in. So, like, I guess content creator, it's weird to say because, like, you know, I just feel like at this point, like, it's such like a broad term and like everybody, you know, is a content creator nowadays. Like, it feels like on the internet because how easy it is. But yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I think we connected on LinkedIn the other day. Yep. And, you know, we've got a ton of cool stuff going on when it comes to content. We'll jump back into cards a little bit here. So, like, for you, do you remember what the first card or moment that kind of sparked your desire to continue collecting was?
Strongly and deeply. My first card ever was an 83 Topps Cal Ripken, which was a second year. And my first major memory with cards, or my first box that I remember opening, was 84 Topps, where I pulled the Mattingly and Strawberry rookies. So very, very clearly, it was my first card, but the first card was bought for me and given to me. So that wasn't pack opened or anything like that. That was a birthday present. But the first packs I ever opened, the first box I ever opened, was 84 Topps. And then subsequently, I went back and opened a whole bunch of stuff before that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, like, I feel like I have the story itself, I feel like, changes all the time, and which card ends up being in the story. I remember, so I grew up on Cape Cod, and there used to be like a flea market. And I'm sure you probably remember stuff like this. It was just like there was like a card dealer that was there, and they would sell these like the long boxes of cards, the long boxes of base cards for like whatever it was, like $10 for like a billion cards, like in the thing, which I ended up figuring out later on. When I first got back into cards, I went kind of home and found my card collection and went through one of those boxes. And I was like, there is like nothing in here. And I'm realizing that now it's probably the dealer or the person probably that was just random base cards. Like, there was literally, I don't think I found one rookie in like a 600 box set that I was looking at.
I think we call now we call them mystery bags.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, luckily back then, you know, those were like $10 for like a box. It was all like, you know, it was like late 80s, early 90s, like random, like Fleer, like random, you know, all the random stuff. Yeah. Exactly.
That's the best stuff.
The stuff that, what's his name? His name is, he does like the card art. Like, he cuts up the cards. I forget his name. I think it's Tim something. I forget off the top of my head what his name is, but it's basically all the cards that he would use if he's like making a new piece, which I'm going to look that up in a second and make sure I
get credit to that guy,
because he does some phenomenal work. But yeah. So, I mean, as a kid, I think everybody has this story. Like, as a kid, we were into sports cards, and then things, you know, we went to high school, went to college, whatever, and then we kind of got back into it. Was that sort of the same thing for you, or did you find that you kind of just throughout your whole entire life, cards have been a part of it?
I have been tied my entire life. I started as a dealer for the first time when I was 14. I set up at my first show at 14 years old. So at 14, I was working mall shows and VFWs, and I did that through 16, 17 years old into college. And then I stopped doing shows because my entire inventory was actually stolen. So a little bit of a different trajectory is I did not voluntarily step away from it. My collection was removed from me. I always loved it. I immediately started trying to rebuild my collection, but I stopped being a dealer at that point. Did go to school, but I was lucky enough to work in Major League Baseball at a college. So it always kept me close to cards and sports. I could never get away from it.
Yeah, I think, especially for you, like, you've worked in sports, you've worked as a dealer. So like, how does, I think on Instagram, I think it says that you worked with like the Braves and the Orioles. So like working in sports, like, do you take anything from that and kind of apply it to cards? Like, or is it kind of like mainly like separate for you, you'd say?
It absolutely changed my view on sports in general, which I think can't help but change my view on cards and collecting. It probably made me more of a vintage lover, because it kept my idols in my mind, and once the current players, and you get to know them and you realize that they are people and people are flawed. And, sometimes your favorite players is not the best player on the team when you get to know the guys. And so then you start looking at their cards differently, and then you start collecting cards and your PC stuff of guys that nobody else has heard of, but they're a nice guy and you became friends with them. And then you don't collect certain people because you've met them and you don't like them personally and you don't really want to own their cards. So there's some of that, but then there's also the prospect side of it. I love the minor leagues. I love prospecting. I love minor league baseball. And I definitely now take more into account the mentality, work ethic, a lot of the human nature elements of players when if I'm projecting, in that situation, for my personal collection or professionally, I definitely look at them more as human beings and less as just numbers.
Yeah, I could see that. Oh, and also, so Tim Carroll Art, that's the artist that I was referring to that I found on his Instagram. He does some phenomenal work. I mean, I remember seeing him do one of the pieces that he did live. He has some like really cool stuff. I'm actually just going to pull up his Instagram really quick just to make sure I give him, make sure I'm giving him credit for just a little bit here.
First of all, I love sports art. And so you always give the artist credit. So I'm glad you're doing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was either this one that he did at the National Live. But yeah, these are kind of the two famous ones that I sort of, when I was getting back into sports cards, and I have a background in graphic design. So like that was kind of my comeback into sports cards was like the design aspect of it. So, the art side of sports cards was sort of how I dove headfirst into this. So like he was somebody that I definitely saw like doing this type of art, and I met him at the National. He's super nice. So I was definitely, really cool to see some of the art that he had, that he was doing like in action, stuff like that.
It's funny. I was looking at that page. I could have looked at every piece on there. That stuff is gorgeous. Thank you for introducing me.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, it's all of the, like, it's like cut up cards. So, I mean, it's a recycling of cards that, at some point may have just ended up in like a landfill or something like that. So like, it's good that we're doing a little bit of recycling and reusing of stuff that, like I said, would have just ended up in a landfill somewhere. So that's, a ton of fun as well. So for you, like within cards and working in sports, like the content creation aspect of it, how did you start getting into content creation around sports cards, or do you have any background in any other type of content creation? Like, is that something that you've dove into at all?
I think I did what you're not supposed to do. I knew nothing. I didn't know what I didn't know. I came from a radio background, and I said, you know what? Everybody's doing one of these podcast things, and I've done live radio, so it must be the same thing. And it wasn't. And being by yourself and not having an audience or a caller always, to play off of, was a different experience. So it took me a little while to get comfortable doing a one-person podcast. And what I found over the years is I like talking to other people a lot more. So I changed the format of my own podcast to do a lot more interviews And I do more shows like you and I are on Hobby Hotline together, and where we get to just talk to each other and talk to other smart people or other interesting people in the hobby. And that part of content creation, I never expected. I never expected it to be relationship-based. You know, in the radio business, so much of it is time slots and hosts and commercials and, you know, and so much around, you know, so many of those things. And then you get into the hobby and you're doing content. You're talking about, you know, what you love with people you love. And that's addicting to me. I get a high off of a great conversation. When you and I are sitting here and, you know, you're teaching me something new, you know, in a hobby where, you know, I've been in 30 years and now I have a new artist I'm about to go look up tonight and check out Tim's work. And, you know, that to me never gets old. So, you know, from a content creator standpoint, I look at it as a two-way street. I'm creating content, but that content creation allows me to absorb content in return. And that's what good guests do for me. And that's what good co-hosts do for me. And that's why I enjoy being a guest. So the radio background was helpful in some ways, but it's a lot of hours doing podcasts and YouTube, I think, to you get any sort of comfort level. And if I ever get there, I'll let you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me too, I think you made a really great point there. I think like the learning aspect of cards is really, I mean, that's where, like for me, I think when it comes to what I really love about cards is that like learning a new thing about cards is just like there, it seems like there are like endless amounts of things you can learn in the hobby. And I mean, that's, you know, whether it's you're talking to somebody or you're talking to like I talked to Mike Summer, and he told me a really cool story about how he was, he used to read the Beckett magazine. And then recently he's been featured in a couple different Beckett articles. So it's like, it's cool to see the stories that are also being told kind of within sports cards. Cause, you know, I've said this on a billion different shows, but I think like we're writing sort of the story of cards right now. And like all the people who are creating content are, you know, we're writing the story of what's going on now, maybe what's happened in the past. You know, I mean, Dr. Beckett is a guy that we have, that I've spoken to a bunch of times on Hobby Hotline. And I think he is just a treasure trove of like knowledge and, all that kind of stuff. Like, I feel like I always am learning something new, you know, whenever he's kind of discussing, and it's always interesting to hear his perspective on stuff like that. So, you know, for you, like, have sports cards, like, what's something that you've learned from sports cards, basically?
Wow, what haven't I learned from sports cards? You know, I think what I've learned is it's a great neutralizer in a lot of ways, because you can be the guy who bought the $12.6 million Mickey Mantle and be just as happy as the guy who bought the $12, you know, Aaron Judge base card. And you know, and there's something just magical about that. Everybody can enjoy this hobby in their own way. And so I think what I've learned is to be a lot more patient about other people's interests, be a lot more patient with other people who, you know, there's no right way to hobby. There's no wrong way to hobby. And I think for a long time, I had a perspective of, if you were not educated enough on A, B, or C, you shouldn't participate in X, Y, or Z until you're educated. And I think that was a very short-sighted view. I think what the hobby should do is embrace people, bring them in, and then help educate them while they're in the hobby. And so I have found and learned to be far more inclusive on different levels of hobbyists, different types of collectors. And I think that's probably a good human lesson, not just a card lesson. For me personally, that's something I needed to be better at. And I have enjoyed learning about different ways people collect it. I don't have to change the way I collect, but getting to learn about somebody else who only collects on card autos. Well, that's fascinatingly different from the way I collect, but that's really cool. And that allows me to learn about that. So, what has the hobby taught me? It's taught me a lot about people and a lot about interest and niches. I think it's also taught me that in some ways, though, still the things you love are still a business. You know, even if whether you're buying a packet at your local card store or you're in the business itself, I mean, at some level, you know, this is a big business. And just to have your eyes open, you know, even while you do what you love, is something for me that I find is a part of my hobby world is staying on top of, I guess, the backside and the business side also.
Yeah, I think that last point you made there is really good. I think one thing about sports cards that's interesting, that like it's a business for a lot of people, and it's like a business that you really can do at almost any age. Like it's, there's no age barrier to get in. You don't have to be, you know, any type of race. You don't have to be any type of education level. You don't have to be any type of age. Like I was saying, it's a phenomenal way, I think, to learn business. And, you know, when it comes to business, there's, you know, relationships, all that kind of stuff. And I mean, for me, that's sort of, I think the one thing that I've learned the most is that like the relationships that you're making along the way are important, just from a, you know, a person to person perspective, but also from a business perspective, because like the, you never know sort of who is watching or who is listening. I mean, I think a cool story actually recently, it was kind of like in the middle of the pandemic, someone reached out to me on Instagram and they were saying how they bought a bunch of the Topps 2020 project cards, 'cause I was talking about them on TikTok. And like I said, it was just some random person that I never knew, that I didn't know that they watched the content. They didn't really like comment on any of the stuff. And I FaceTimed with them and they're like, yeah, changed. Like I bought a bunch of the first few because I heard you talking about it. And like, I'm out of like all of this debt that I had and all this kind of stuff. So I was like mind blown. I was just like, I can't even believe that it's probably one of the only times that someone has said that. But like at the same time, it was like, it was super cool. And I mean, even like at the National a couple of times, like going up to people and like, you know, it's always fun to meet people in real life after, you know, we've had all these online relationships with people. Like, you know, that was one thing at the 2021 National that like I enjoyed the most, was like meeting people and like see, and it even, you know, the other cool thing is like meeting people that you didn't even know knew who you were. So it's like, it's definitely fun. And so from a, you know, a business perspective, is there anything that you would say, like, do you have any advice for somebody who's maybe looking to get into sports cards or trying to learn about the business a little bit more?
My 12-year-old son has been going to card shows since he was 7. And he has learned more business skills at card shows. And you could not be more right to your point. I would say just physically go to things in person, in the networking, the interpersonal skills, the human relation skills. All of those things are good lessons in life and business, not just sports cards. But they can be applied very early on. Like you said, you know, there's no barrier to entry in sports cards. So getting involved at any age, you know, whether it's your child or yourself, meet people, get to know them, talk to them. Don't be afraid to ask questions. I mean, I would think, you know, some of the biggest business lessons I've learned were who to ask and what to ask. And my grandfather always told me, you know, they gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth and you're supposed to use them in that ratio. And I love that saying. So when I meet people at the National, like you said, in person, and you get a couple minutes with somebody, take advantage of that opportunity to ask a question that you've always been, you know, curious about. And there are no dumb questions. You know, if you're thinking about it, so is somebody else. And I guarantee, you know, the one thing I've learned in this hobby are most people want to lift each other up. And that's a really nice thing. Is that it doesn't matter if you see them on YouTube or on a magazine or if you just run into them in person at the show, a lot of the people are going to be the same, and they will give you the time of day and they will answer a question. And that's a business skill, is learning how to talk to those people who you think you may not be able to talk to. And the hobby brings it back to the card. So you have that safe space. And that's really, that safe space is really a lesson for life. So for whatever you're doing in business, you figure out how to create that common denominator of networking. And that's a human business skill.
Right. Yeah. And I think from a business perspective too, this industry probably more than others, just in an instant, it can just change so quickly. Like, you know, it was like one random, like Thursday night in the middle of December, and Fanatics came in over the top. And it's just like, now they're like, you know, they're like the overlords of the hobby right now. And like, it's, but, and nobody really saw it coming. I mean, I'm sure people probably had a little bit of behind the scenes info, but like, it's really just a business where you're always trying to have to adapt and you're always learning, and always there's always new stuff that you can kind of get into. So, I mean, from your perspective, like, is there anything that you're looking forward to in the next, you know, let's say 5 to 10 years? I know it's kind of far out, and maybe honestly, maybe you could even bring it down and say 2 to 3 years, but probably like, what are you excited for in the hobby, like in the next few years?
I think the merging of experiential and real life interactions with athletes is going to merge into the sports card memorabilia world, whether it's through a Fanatics partnership, insert, promotion. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of the things around the cards themselves, whether, you know, tickets is the low hanging fruit. Everybody's in on tickets, but I think you're going to start seeing vintage press guides and media guides from, you know, from famous reporters. You're already seeing, you know, from stuff from people related to the game. I mean, baseball card dorks, you know, Chase Seiberger autographs. I mean, that that never would have happened, you know, decades ago. So I think you're going to start seeing more of this personal relationship that people are looking for, whether it's physically with a player or with, you know, a card that represents that connection. I think it's going to be a much more emotional response to the cards. And I think the Fanatics behind that, that's what they're looking to create, is that connection. So that, like I said, I think from the 30,000 foot view, that's really where it's headed, is much more in that direction to bring more people in and grow that pie they keep talking about. On a short term view, I'm very much looking forward to Hobby News Daily launching.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think too, like, you know, you mentioned the Fanatics mentioning that they're trying to 10X the hobby, grow the pie, however you want to word it. And I think too, that, you know, those one-on-one experiences is really how you create like sort of diehard fans in a way. Like, I think even just from my perspective, all of the games that I remember going to, and it's not necessarily related to sports cards, but all the games that I remember going to as a kid, like, the interaction that I had with those players is, those are the games that I remember. Like, I remember going to spring training and meeting, like, you know, random, like Shea Hill, for this is sort of a specific example, but like, I met Shea Hillenbrand when, and he's like, people probably have no idea who that is. He's like he was the third baseman for the Red Sox for a while. Yeah. And you know, I had this like old Red Sox red hat, this old Red Sox hat. And it was like, I wore it every single day, and I wore it so much that it became orange. And, you know, he like was joking about like how, you know, how orange my hat was and how it was discolored. And it's like, I remember those random moments like with those kids or as a kid. And I think that could be, it's definitely going to be what I hope Fanatics is trying to maybe focus a little bit more on. You know, I know that they have done the experiences, and they do, you know, Topps, not necessarily Fanatics, but Topps does like the experience, you know, they do like the golden ticket. They do a bunch of other things, but I really would like to see them.
And I definitely agree. I mean,
you're still there, Danny?
Yeah, no, I'm here and I'm agreeing with you. I love the idea of getting involved with the athletes. I think,
hey, hold on.
You know,
hey, can you hear me?
Yep, you're good.
Okay, sorry. I thought for some reason the internet must have kicked out there for a second. But yeah, so like the one-on-one experience, I at least that's what I hope they are focusing on. And I mean, so we'll shift back to you for a little bit. So like, what are like your collection? Like, what does it look like? Like, do you have like a PC or like, do you only flip cards? Like, what does the collection that you have sort of, you know, and obviously it probably changes on a day-to-day basis, but like for the most part, like, what does it look like for you?
It's funny. I actually don't share my PC often, but I'll give you a little glimpse. I'm very much a targeted collector, kind of a mini group. So completely dorking out, the Baltimore Orioles came from St. Louis in 1954. I have what part of my PC is the 1954 Topps Orioles team set. It's a beautiful color. The 54 set has great color to it. So one of the things that I PC is that entire set and have that on display. I PC Sandy Koufax. I'm a huge Oriole, Baltimore collector, Baltimore Colt, old Baltimore Colt collector. I collect some vintage women's softball. So if you want a Jenny Finch auto or a Lisa Fernandez, which is a sticker auto, which drives me nuts on my Lisa Fernandez. I actually have been into those cards for probably 10, 15 years. Well before, you know, a lot of that was popular, but I just collect what I like. I collect the Bill Ripken error. I guess you call it the rainbow. I don't know what the proper term is for all the variations of that error card, but I do collect those. And, you know, just kind of whatever gets me. Right now I'm working on the 1957 set. So right now my big pet project is the 1957 top set, putting that together. So that's my personal collecting. And that gives me a nice reprieve from the business world, where I am going through other people's cards all day and dealing with their collections in a very different manner, where it's very, very dollar-centric. My collection is very much for me. I used to work for the Braves. So the Greg Maddux, I have the PSA rookie, you know, set register. And, you know, listen, I'll work to upgrade that eventually. It's not a high dollar thing, but that's just fun projects like that or the stuff I do individually.
Nice. Yeah. And I got a couple other questions for you. So similar to that last question, what is a card that you have within your collection that means a lot to you? If you're willing to share,
great question. I just got one. I just picked up the 57 Topps Frank Robinson rookie for my 57 set, and being a Baltimore guy, and maybe just because it's new right now and I'm waiting for it to come back from PSA, and it shipped today. So it's very top of mind and I'm very excited. So I actually am getting the goosebumps talking about it. That's what happens when you have cards you love on their way back from PSA. You know, is I won't sleep well until that tracking number hits. So right now,
right, it's either goosebumps or you're wiping cobwebs off of yourself. Right. You've been sitting there for so long, like waiting for your cards to come back. Exactly. It's one or the other.
The 57 Frank Robinson rookie. I'm very excited to finally have that in my collection.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I feel like when you, it's kind of similar, like when, you know, how, so if I'm going to have a little bit of a follow-up question here. So like that card specifically, was it one that you were searching for a while, or is it one that, you know, you were saving up for, or like, how did you come about eventually getting that card? Like sort of what's the story behind like, maybe like how you got that card?
The collection that was stolen, I had certain cards that emotionally I was connected to, and they included all the Oriole retired Hall of Fame players and retired number of players. And so you're talking about Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson, Earl Weaver, Jim Palmer, and Cal Ripken. And so for me, specifically replacing those cards was 30 years almost in the making. There was a real final, like, I don't know if it was an emotional thing. I never quite pulled the trigger. I never quite did it. And then, I finally pulled the trigger. So I think part of it, is how much it means to me emotionally, and how important that card is. It's a Baltimore thing. It's a Frank Robinson rookie. You know, it's part of that 57 set, you know, which I just love the set for so many reasons. And I feel like now I can kind of go back and go ahead and get my Brooks rookie, and I don't care about the grades. I mean, you can always upgrade a card, but just having it in the collection, very, very cool on a personal level.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I appreciate you sharing that story, because I feel like, you know, like you said, you don't talk about your PC super often. I mean, for me, I guess, I don't know, my PC is sort of just like stuff that I don't end up selling. Like, I feel like it's just ends up being like random stuff. Like, you know, like I have like a bunch of like random, well, not random, but I have like a bunch of like Weston McKennie cards that I actually probably should start to sell, because now he's in the Premier League. But either way, I mean, yeah, it's definitely, like I said, thank you for sharing that story. I think that's, you know, that's, I feel like for most collectors, they have some sort of story like that. So like, I definitely want to try and get, I kind of want to try and get more people to tell stories about specific stuff, because I feel like sometimes content in the hobby can be very general. And I mean, I definitely find myself with that sometimes. So, but I think those, you know, those specific stories are sort of what's great about the hobby, and what's, because it's so different for everybody too. Yep.
And you and I need to talk soccer cards more. As you're talking about Weston McKennie, I'm looking at my Vinnie Jr. Red press proof here. You know, we maybe offline we'll have to do a little negotiating and work out some deals here with the games coming up. I got some desk numbered stuff you might be interested in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because like I honestly, and I'll just quickly share the story, but like when I was first getting back into soccer cards, I just looked up, I literally was like looking up soccer cards and then like USA players. And like, cause I didn't even know any of the players. Like that's the kind of the crazy part about like doing the research. Like I didn't even know who the player, I knew Pulisic. That was the only player that I really knew. But then I like looked it up and it was, there was like a random article with list and McKennie was on there. And I was buying like McKennie Topps Chrome rookies for like, I think I bought like two lots, maybe from the same person for like 40 cards for like $30 at the time. So like looking back on it, like that was, I mean, it was, I don't know if I'm like the leading Weston McKennie collector in the hobby, but like I must be up there. I literally have like, I have like 100 of his like base 2018 rookie cards.
If Mrs. McKennie calls, you'll know why.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, for sure. We got John coming into the chat saying hello. What's up, John? How we doing?
Yo, hello.
John, obviously another one of our co-hosts on Hobby Hotline. Phenomenal content creator, great podcast. Definitely somebody that, you know, I vouch for, one of, you know, one of the most stand-up guys you'll probably meet in this hobby that I can't really, I don't really know. Sometimes it's like hard to give someone enough props, but like I said, just one of the best guys in the hobby. So I got one last question for you, and sure. It's a question that's probably kind of similar to what we were just talking about.
As long as it's not about John Newman, that's okay.
Yeah. No, it's maybe a card that you haven't picked up for your collection yet, or maybe it's a card that maybe you have in your collection and sort of just it's in there. So like, what would you consider as like your dream card?
1933 Moberg. The Gaudi Moberg. I have owned that card probably 18 times and I've bought and sold it and I've never let myself keep it. I think like you sometimes, you know, you end up, your PC ends up being what you don't sell. And I would like to finally buy it one time and not sell it. Just say, it doesn't matter what offer I get. It doesn't matter. I'm keeping this card. And I have a list when I go into every national of a couple cards I'm targeting, and I like to talk about it after the national so people don't buy the cards. Because that happened to me last year. But I will say I am looking for a 33 Gaudi Moberg, not the 41 play ball. People, please don't try to sell me that. But yes, that is very much a dream card. And the 57 Topps Johnny Unitas. Getting back to why that 57 year so awesome for Baltimore sports. And if money wasn't an issue, and I'll take this off, being a Baltimore guy, I want the Babe Ruth Baltimore News American. Absolutely, all day, every day, in front of the Wagner, in front of the mantle, I would take the Ruth News American.
Yeah, I feel like honestly that's kind of for me like too, like that the conversation of like dream card, it's always like, you know, what realistically you could buy, and then like, you know, the dream card is like when if you didn't have a budget, it's like, you know, you think of just any crazy card you can really find in the hobby. And I mean, there's tons of them off the top of my head I can think of. And I think, you know, like any one of one like random player growing up, I mean, like Devin Hester is a random player. Like, and it's, I feel like there's always random stories within when you have like a favorite player, like Devin Hester. I do play a lot of video games, but like one game that I used to play a lot more of was Madden. And I think it was like Madden 07 or 08. I would play as the Bears online and I would move. Devin Hester was a cornerback, but I would move him to wide receiver. And he was the fastest player. I just have him run down the field and I'd throw him a fade and he'd score a touchdown every single time. And I mean, he usually saved those plays for the end of the game, but like he was just, it's random stuff like that. I feel like those are kind of the cool cards. I know, I think there's like a one of one Bowman that he has, but Yeah, I mean, those, the, you know, the dream card, I feel like could have so many different meanings for everybody. But I think we're, I think I'm going to wrap things up here with everything. I mean, I really obviously appreciate you coming on. I mean, we have, I feel like we've gotten to know each other pretty well over the past few weeks with Hobby Hotline and Hobby News Daily. You know, obviously that's, you know, it's pretty, like I said, important, you know, relationships that you're building online and then hopefully meeting in person, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, let people know, sort of give them a quick summary of what you got going on, where they can find you, you know, all the, you know, good stuff that kind of comes at the end of some of these interviews.
No, thank you. And thank you again for having me. I mean, I can't believe we went that long, that quick. It feels like we just started. I'm going to put all the attention on everybody else right now. Hobbynewsdaily.com at Hobby News Daily. Best collection of content creators, original writers, people doing fantastic work, including Adam, who I'm going to say this for the first time in waiting for it, absolutely killed it on Morning Minute on Hobby News Daily. And I've gotten compliments from a lot of listeners today. So you will hear Adam and lots of other people. So just go follow Hobby News Daily. And if you can get a hold of me through that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, appreciate you coming on. You know, we talk basically on like a daily basis sometimes. Yep. So, you know, we'll talk soon. I will, thank you. Yep. Like I said, thank you for coming on.
No, my pleasure. And I really, you do a great job and I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.